Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Good evening, good evening. It is now 10 past 6. It's on the 16th of January 2025. I'm David Zeidel, and this is the very first Ought Business Show. It's a new feature. We're going to be taking you through a whole lot of things that hopefully will educate you through what is business, how can you do business better, and what are the little things. There are sometimes very little things that you can change that make a huge difference. The format of the show will be that I'll give you a little bit of a story, a little bit of a business story, something that maybe we can learn from, and then we'll go through to a guest. And tonight's guest is Dana Druin, who runs the Rosebank Market, the flea market, and we'll listen to that story and learn from that. Where do I fit in? Where do I come from? So I've been in the education business for the last over 20 years. I do some facilitation and lecturing at various different business schools, and I'm hoping to bring some of that education through to everybody and to you tonight. We've got the open line, so please, you can message us if you have any questions, and we'll try incorporate it as we go along. So just a little story to start off with. Many, many years ago, I happened to meet with Stephen Covey, and Stephen Covey wrote that fantastic book, I'm sure you've heard about it, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And I had written a book, and we swapped books, and I got home, and he had written a dedication in the book. And the message was, David, thanks for your book. And then he said, you're a trim tab. And I looked at this and I didn't understand what a trim tab was. And then we went and had a look to see, what does a trim tab mean? And a trim tab is the little rudder that fits on the big rudder that moves the whole ship. So I could look at this and think, he's telling me you're just a little rudder. Or he's telling me you're the little rudder that moves the bigger rudder that moves the whole ship. And that's the message, and that's the message around what this show is about. It's the little things that make the big things happen. And sometimes when you're running a business, and we'll hear the stories of the different people who are joining us, but sometimes when you change one little thing, it has a big impact. And it's about trying these things and trying to understand what those little things are that you could change. So I'd like to also mention that we're not giving specific advice. We're not giving you a roadmap. They often say that the question is it science? Is business science? Or is it art? Science means that if you do the same thing over and over again, you'll get exactly the same results. And art is you play with different things and see what the result is. And it's a little bit of both. It's about knowing that you need to do the certain things, like you know that you need to sell at a price that's higher than your cost so that you can make some profit. But sometimes that doesn't even work. And sometimes you don't even know what your costs are, and it still works. That's a little bit of the art around it. So we're not giving you a roadmap. We're not giving you a ways. We're giving you a compass. This show is about showing you the direction, maybe, that you should be going into. So I'd like to introduce you to Dana Druin. Dana, good evening and welcome to the show.
Good evening, and good evening to your listeners.
Great. So I mentioned to you when I first met with you, I said, so what's your story? And I'm going to fill in a little bit about what you told me, and then we can unpack some of that. So if I remember correctly, you told me that your mom loved helping out in different places, and you went with her, and she tried to help people in feeding schemes and get work and find work. And at the age of about 15, that's when you actually decided that you want to be a social worker.
Right.
And you want to help other people. And that led you to become a social worker. But at the same time, you collected some jewelry and you opened up a store at the flea market. And you became doing both things, earning two livings. And then what happened is there was some issue with the owners of the flea market and the shopping center it was in, and they closed down, and 250 or 350 people lost their jobs.
Correct.
And you saw the impact of that, and that's where the social worker part of you kicked in. And you are now the owner of a rooftop market by accident. You're an accidental entrepreneur. So just take us through a little bit what actually happened there from your point of view, and did you have the skills beforehand to do what you're now doing, and do you still have the skills or you still don't have the skills? And just talk us through that emotional time of going from owning a store to deciding you're going to run the market, if that was a conscious decision.
Right. So that wasn't a conscious decision at the time. But as you mentioned, I grew up in a family that was always committed to community on many different levels. My father served in the Israeli army in 1948. He was a volunteer. He took many community positions. My mother took community positions. They were both, in their day, mayors of Sandton. They did a lot of work building up the communities around them. So when I chose to be a social worker, it was to try and help people and empower people. And I always felt particularly drawn to job creation. So when the market closed, I, as a social worker, worried where other people were earning their living. I was surviving because I had a therapy practice, and I also sold jewelry at other antique markets, but I wondered what had happened to all the people that had been at the market and that had nowhere to sell anymore. So I decided to just try and find somewhere where everybody could start selling again, with no real foresight as to what that would involve. It was a gut reaction. It was an instinctive reaction. But I didn't really envisage what it would entail, which meant changing my career completely, changing direction, pivoting, as they say, since COVID, and becoming a business owner, which wasn't really what I had on the cards.
And going into something like that and not knowing what you're doing, did you read any books that helped? Did you ask people for help? How did you, as you call it, pivot?
So I did read a motivational book when the market closed. I made a very conscious decision not to get into a funk over it. And I was losing a large part of my income. So I could have very easily decided to just get into the depression side of it. But I made a very conscious effort not to do that and read a wonderful book on the laws of attraction. And that really kept me afloat and motivated me to rather be proactive instead of being reactive.
Great. So I want to ask you a little bit more around that book. But before we do that, we're going to go to an ad break. But when you come back, for those of you, or for if you've just tuned in right now, I'm talking to Donna Druin, and it's about becoming an accidental entrepreneur.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome to back to the Ort Jet Show. I'm David Zeidel. I'm talking to Donna Druin, and we're unpacking going from being a store owner of a in a market, and then finally running the whole market. So you mentioned just before the break, you mentioned that you read this motivation book. What do you remember the title of the book?
It was called The Laws of Attraction, if I remember correctly, and the author was Sandra Hawley, and it was a lot about positive affirmation and attracting abundance and knowing how to set your mind in the right way in order to achieve what you want to achieve. And that was very influential in my life and came right at the right moment.
And also, being the Ort Jet Show, we know that Ort helps with mentors and with people to assist and lecturing and training. Did you make any use of any of that? Did that assist you in any way?
So I did. I knew that I wanted to open a forum for traders, And I did approach AutJet to assist me in opening a market, because at that point, the property managers of the mall invited us to come back to the mall, but I didn't know how to go about opening a market. And AutJet did provide me with a mentor who partnered with me at that time and actually set up the whole structure for the reopening of the market. I did a lot of the groundwork, working with traders, setting up the actual running of the market, and he set up the whole administrative structure, which was extremely useful, without which I wouldn't have managed to do it.
And where are you at today? So you took over the market, you're now running the market. It was, if I'm not mistaken, was it 250 people at the time, or stores at the time?
Where so at the today? Time there were 350, but we are in a much smaller space now. So we have reached capacity where we're at right now, which is between 200 and 300 traders on a Sunday. Why that varies is because we have an added on event on certain Sundays, which will now be expanding to almost every Sunday. When we have those add-on events, we will be between 250 and 300, which is more or less the capacity of the market.
Great. So I'm David Zeidel. I'm talking to Donna Drin. If you have any questions, you can WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. And we'll try incorporate your questions as we go along. Part of when people can join the market, they can join the market, if we look from their business point of view, either as a permanent store or temporary store. You were explaining to me before the difference, that there's a big difference between somebody who has a permanent store to a temporary store from just their running of their business. Well, what is that difference for them?
So I would say a lot of, maybe the majority of traders say, I'll come to the market for 1 or 2 weeks or even a month and try it out. Whereas other traders say, I'm coming to the market and I'm going to commit to being there every Sunday. But that feels like a very big commitment and it feels very scary. However, I always advise traders to start as casuals and see if the market's going to work for them. But once they feel that it's working, to commit to being there every single Sunday. Because if one is not there every Sunday, there's no consistency and you cannot build up a loyal clientele if there's no consistency. I can go through a more detailed understanding of what it is to be a permanent trader. If you come as a once off or even twice off, you may hit a quiet period and then you don't know whether your business is going to be successful or not. But if you come on a busy day, you might think that this is the place to be, and then it may not continue that way. So one has to be able to weather the ups and downs in building a business. There's very little consistency, but you have to know that there will be good times and there will be times that are not as good. But I think consistency and commitment are really the key to success, ultimately. Also, if one's a permanent trader, customers feel that they can rely on you. Can you imagine going to Pick and Pay and looking for your favorite product only to find that they're not on the shelf that week? You would very soon get annoyed with your supermarket or not go back to that supermarket for those products. Mm. You want to know that if there's something you want, you can find it and you can find it easily. And many traders who are permanent traders have also built up a loyal following. They've made connections to overseas markets, into supermarkets, into shops, because they have a consistent presence at the market. It's really given them an in into retail outlets, and that is often the key to their success. But that doesn't happen if they fly by night and if they only come on Mother's Day or Father's Day. It happens when they are consistent.
So if I can just unpack what some of the lessons that I've learned so far from what you're saying. So first of all, bad things happen. The store closes down or the market closes down. So you said you made a conscious decision, and I think you used the term not to funk. We're not going to depression.
Exactly.
Then you became proactive. You did something positive and you started talking to people, you started reading books, you mentioned the laws of attraction, and then you're saying, another thing to be successful for you and for others and for the people owning the stalls is to commit. When you're going to do something, commit, because you don't know at what stage you're committing. You don't know if it's at the top of the market or the bottom, and you need to test out all these different things. And it's almost like what we would say, doing research into the business. You've got to be there long enough to know what works, what doesn't work.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
I would say that that has been, in a way, the key to our business, because when we rebuilt the market after a couple of years of very, very hard work, then COVID hit. And we had to close for 6 months, and then we reopened, and then we had to close for another month during hard lockdown. So if that consistency and commitment had not been there, we would never have been able to see our way through COVID. We just had to believe that there was a light at the end of the tunnel, and we would switch on that light. Mm. And that's what pulled us through that period, and so many of the traders. Although many of them disappeared, we had a very small base of about 70 traders that had that commitment, and they came back and they helped us restart. And now, after 2 or 3 years since COVID, we have rebuilt the market once again to capacity. But it was never easy. And I remember walking through the market many, many, many times, not being able to look at traders in the eye, because I felt so concerned that there weren't really enough customers or enough business. But people hung in there.
Mm.
And we rebuilt together. It was a joint process, not mine, but myself with all my staff and the traders.
And just talking about, you now running the market, but you still own your store.
That's correct.
What's the purpose of still owning your store? Are there some benefits to owning the market and still owning a store then?
Well, I feel that being a store owner, number one, it is an additional income, which has come very much in handy at times when cash flow may not have been ideal. And also, it's given me a real insight into what's happening on the ground. So when you are one of them, you feel things the way the traders feel them. So if the market is vibey and pumping and people are making money, I literally feel that viscerally. I can sense when the market is good and when there's a wonderful energy. And I can also sense when there's not a good energy. So when traders come to me with their concerns and issues, I identify. I don't dismiss them because I'm an owner and I don't really understand what people on the ground are going through. I really hear them, because what affects them affects me too. So I'm really one of them. And I think that that is also given traders trust and confidence, because they know that I understand. When I unpack in the morning, it takes me 3 hours to unpack, and I know what that hard work involves. And I respect the traders that travel from far, that have to come by taxi, that work so hard. I think trading is one of the hardest things you can ever do, trading at a market. Mm. It's very hard work. And I respect the people that are resilient and that manage to do that despite their challenges. And I think that's because I've been one of them.
So I think you use the word "because I've been one of them." I think it's more than that. I think you're still one of them.
I am one of them.
And it's an amazing thing. Like, there are lots of business courses that talk about know your customer. Know what the, try put yourself in their shoes. And you're literally doing that. There's an amazing show, and I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's called Undercover Boss, which is a TV show. And they take CEOs of companies, and they take them and they put them into the business as working for the company, and they realize things about their own business that they didn't know before as just being the boss. And I think your story is like a live undercover boss, or not even that. It's you're one of the customers, and you can see things from the customer's point of view. So I think that's an amazing lesson, if we could all do that, is run a business but still be a customer to our own business, so we can feel the pain. We understand what the customer's going through.
Right, exactly. And there's another level of customers. My customers are my traders, but they are also the customers to the market. Now, I love markets, so I also know what it feels like to be a customer at a market. What I want to see, what I want to experience, how things should look. I don't always manage to achieve that, but it certainly gives me insight on many different levels for the role that I have to fulfill.
Mm. And so it's basically you're doing something that you love doing. Sounds like it's important to you. Is that important to enjoy what you're doing in a business?
Well, I always remember my cousin Daryl Egdus, who owns Vodacom World of Golf and the Pro Shop and a number of other businesses. And when I was deciding whether to buy my partner out at one point, I asked Daryl's advice. And he said to me, Donna, do what you're passionate about, because you will never succeed unless you have real passion for what you're doing. And for me, it's not about running a market or even really owning anything. It's about empowering people and seeing people being able to make a living, especially in South Africa, where there is such a lack of job creation and so many people do not have jobs. And seeing my trader succeed and make money is what I consider success. So it's not about the money I make or the success of the market. It's about how my traders are making money and supporting their families.
And have you got any special stories about any of the traders that you'd like to share with us?
Yes, I've got a wonderful story, which just shows the spirit of Ubuntu that is at our market. There was a lady who unfortunately passed away due to the shocking levels of healthcare in this country, who contracted cancer, but she was a remarkable woman. Her name was Maria, and she empowered people to do farming. She was given a piece of ground in Diepsloot and trained people as farmers, and then she would come and sell their produce at the market. And one day at the end of the day, Maria said to me that she had lost all the money she had earned. It had been stolen from her. And I announced over the intercom for traders to please come and buy from her if there were any traders left, or to give her a donation, as she couldn't go home empty-handed to this community that relied on her. Many traders came and gave her money or bought produce that they didn't really need, and she managed to raise the same amount of money. And at the end of the day, she said to me, I think I gave somebody my money, which was in a blue plastic packet instead of the vegetables they bought, because I've still got the vegetables, but the money's gone. But she remembered who that had been. And I contacted that lady, who went to double check and found that she did indeed have all Maria's money. So she brought it back to her. And you would think Maria would be very happy to go home with double proceeds. But instead, she went to find every single trader that she could to return their money to them, because she knew how much that donation meant to them. It might have been their transport money or their kids' food money for school or whatever it was. Most of them, of course, told her to keep the money. But that is the spirit that really survives at our market. There's a lot of support between traders. There's a wonderful feeling of Ubuntu in the market, and it's a real communal support for not only for our traders, but for many customers who come as well.
So the people who work there are independent, but they feel like they're part of a family, part of community.
Very much so. Very much so.
And then I presume the customers come in and walk through the market and get that sense of,
they do,
of what's happening.
They do. So there's one customer who helps another beautiful story. Have I got time to tell it?
Of course you have.
There's another trader who came to the market. She was introduced to me. She was disabled. And I gave her a free stall because I saw that she was a single mother of four and she was disabled, and literally dragged herself to the market in extreme pain every week. And when I saw how the pain was affecting her, she was on very strong painkillers. I reached out to somebody who wouldn't want to be mentioned, but he is very influential at Netcare. And he asked me to send her medical records, and the Netcare Foundation agreed to give her a hip replacement.
Wow.
So she had a hip replacement, but in the time that she was recovering, other traders bought her 16-year-old son ran her stall, and other traders bought food for her children, bought school supplies for her children, and everybody helped her while she was recovering. And this is another indication of that spirit of Ubuntu. But there's a customer who actually got to know her and now has organized that she teaches her daughter how to knit and how to crochet. Not only did she do that, but she introduced her to this child's school, which is an affluent school, and they have markets at the school. So now she's selling at those school markets as well and teaching other kids how to crochet. So this was from a customer who recognized the need and also has built a very strong relationship with her and helps her.
Wow, that's incredible. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Donna Druin from the Rosebank Flea Market. If you have any questions, you can WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. So if you look at your whole story and you look back at it, what are kind of the three or four or five key lessons that you've learned that you think can help other people just if they're becoming an entrepreneur? What are the key things to look at or to think about?
Well, I know for me in my journey, without the help of the person who helped me start the Rosebank Sunday Market, I would not have been able to do it. So one of my first messages is do not be afraid to ask for help. I think so many people don't want to show that they don't have the skills that are necessary. There's so many pitfalls for new businesses, and there are so many organizations like Orchet that are willing and very able to assist. I've come across a lot of them in my time. So many people have great ideas and wonderful products, but that's very different to actually running a business. And I think people need to know what steps to take in order to really set up and establish a business. That's one lesson. Another lesson is that entrepreneurs have to market their businesses. So I know that in the market, maybe it's what applies to traders doesn't always apply to other entrepreneurs, but I think it does. They expect that if they are showing their goods and they are present, it's enough. But it's not enough. One needs to always draw attention to one's business through very good marketing. And today that's often on social media. I find particularly what works for traders is Instagram. But I think that that's a skill that one, if one doesn't have that, one needs to go to people that do have that skill.
Just on that, so you're talking about not just marketing while you're at the market. You're talking about marketing further so that the market is the beginning and then you're expanding it further into Instagram, etc.
Exactly. So I think when people just rely on being present on a Sunday, it's not nearly enough. You have to imagine if you were a stall in a mall, if you were a shop in a mall, if you were Pick and Pay or Woolworths, would you just say being in the mall's enough? Mm. I don't need to advertise. Of course not. They do extensive advertising, and that's the same for entrepreneurs.
Great. Just before we go on to the next one, I don't know if you know, but they've actually got, similar to Instagram, they've got something for grannies, where they can talk about their grandchildren. And I think they call it Instagram.
So I haven't heard of it.
Just another bad joke, but I thought I'd throw in a joke just before we go to the ad break. When we come back, we'll hear from Donna Druin about the rest of the key lessons that she learned from running the rooftop market.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
So, welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. I'm talking to Donna Druin from the Rosebank Rooftop Market. And she's busy sharing with us the key things, the key lessons that you learn from being an entrepreneur and the new things to know. And started off with the first thing, do not be afraid to ask. And asking is just, not just asking, but maybe getting a mentor, maybe getting advice from people. And the second one was to market your business, and maybe not just market it as maybe I understood it. I thought being at the flea market, you market it to everyone who comes to the flea market, but you're saying, no, think broader, think bigger. We're living in a digital age. Go on to Instagram. If you can continue with that and go to maybe the third one.
So another one is to also try and do some research to test whether there is a niche or an interest in your product. Sometimes people, for example, if you think about solar, that's a good example for today. Many people realized that solar was a niche, but once people started doing solar, many people climbed on the bandwagon. And now there's no load shedding. So what has happened to all the businesses that have invested in so many solar products and now find that there isn't really a niche or a demand for that anymore? So I find that's the same thing with the market. People catch on to what is a good product, what sells well. So beauty products, homemade candles, homemade incense, homemade diffusers. That's something that is easy to make. So everybody started making that. But now we are flooded with applications. They haven't really thought about what makes my product a niche product. Is there a need for it? Is there enough of it on the market? Is there a demand? Another good example is flowers. Many people apply to sell flowers at the market, but in the mall, there are people selling flowers. In Woolworths, there are other pop-up stores with flowers. So yes, flowers are a wonderful product, but what would make your flowers unique and not have to compete with the ones that are selling in the mall? These are questions one has to think through very, very carefully, because if you don't think through them, you can land up investing a whole lot of money and time and energy into creating a business when there's actually no need for it, or there's no niche that makes your product unique, even if you want to be in that industry. What sets you apart? Because if you're going to do what hundreds of other competitors do, there's no way you'll survive.
So can I ask you, just on that point, can you think of any examples of people who've been in your marketplace who have done that very well, who've sold something that others are selling, but they've managed to make it their own?
Yes, so the example I just mentioned about soaps and beauty products and things like that, there is a lady, her name is Merle, and she's an architect. So she's very creative and very innovative. Now, she makes soaps and beauty products, but they are completely unique. She does a lot of research about what products won't affect skin or what is completely natural. When she makes her soaps, they look like slices of cake, or they look completely unique. Her packaging is unique. Her style is unique. So she sets herself apart. And because of that, she has a lot of orders from shops or places like that. She also makes toys which are baby-friendly, which are non-toxic, which are made from scraps of fabric, and they are absolutely beautiful. But she sets herself apart. You cannot buy a product like that in a store. No matter how amazing the store is, you cannot find it. They are exclusive to her. Mm. So that's how somebody has taken a common product but set themselves apart.
Could someone be successful in a marketplace if they, let's say, go and buy something from a store in bulk and then come and bring it to the market and sell it bit by bit? Would that really work, or is the flea market meant to be, and can you really be successful only if you're selling something unique?
So, of course, one can be successful. I've always believed price is a big factor. If you can undercut other people in the market, you can always succeed. But our market is actually not a flea market. It's a handmade arts and crafts market.
Right.
So we don't accept bulk products that are commercially produced. We do have an arts and crafts section, and we also have a vintage section for antiques and bric-a-brac and pre-worn clothing. So in our market, that wouldn't necessarily work. I wouldn't necessarily even accept a trader like that unless they could offer something which was really attractive, which may include the price. But I would very seldom accept a product like that.
So if I look at it, what you've done is you created the whole market as a product. The market itself is a product by only accepting certain traders that allow,
of course,
that gives it that image that people, because to be honest with you, when I go to your market, it feels different to, as you say, a flea market. And I've never been able to think, why does it feel different? But maybe it's because of the stands that are there.
Right. And I think that today people can access things on the internet. I think if you're looking for commercially produced products, they're available dime a dozen on the internet. So what is not available is handmade arts and crafts. And I think internationally that's an issue. Even in America, a friend wanted to start a whole online business for our market in America because he said you cannot get handmade products anymore. It's just a dying trade.
Yeah. So I'm David Zeidel. I'm talking to Donna Druin, and it's not a flea market.
It's an art
and crafts market. Fantastic. You were going to go on to number four.
Right. So number four was that you have to find a niche and you have to work out if there's a demand for your product. And number five was not to try and compete with what already exists in the market. So as I've said, I get many, many applications, for example, for beauty products. But when you are competing with a Dis-Chem or a Clicks or a Woolworths that all have beauty ranges, you can't compete. There's too much available. And there's so much available at really reasonable prices. So so you have to look for something that you're not competing with major corporates, something that really sets you apart as being unique. And I think that would apply to any entrepreneur in any field, really.
So if I go back and just sum it up, what you're saying is get a product where there's a demand for it, that people want it, and it's unique. You need to do your research, make sure that you know what that niche market is, that you're aiming for that niche market. You need to market your product as a business, as a greater business, and not be afraid to ask for help.
Exactly.
If you look at, some people feel like when they start a business, they need all the skills. They've got to get all the skills in place before they start. For yourself, when you started the market and running your own store with the jewelry, did you have all the skills? Do you understand your costings of everything?
So this is a very revealing question, as I think you know. In terms of the market, it is a big animal. And I had to outsource. I had to outsource our complete accounting, bookkeeping function. And we have a wonderful team that handle that. And I thought I would mention that their commitment to us has been unequivocal. So, for example, we lost one of our staff members at the market who was handling all the money and the admin at the market. And our accountant came and sat for weeks at the market on a Sunday at a very minimal cost in a stuffy office and trained my new staff, really without earning much for it at all. I don't know any other accountant anywhere that would have done that. So we've got a very trustworthy and excellent accounting team that we outsource all our finances to.
Great. Before you get onto your own personal finance with your store, I think we'll take an ad break and then we'll come back to that.
Okay.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Welcome back to the Ortjet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel. I'm talking to Donna Druin. And you're just about to share with us your unbelievable finance talent that made your store so successful.
So I was just going to say before that is that we also outsource all our social media and marketing. I don't manage that at all. I'm of the old generation that's not so good with that. My own store is just a divine intervention story because I didn't have any real understanding of running a business and still don't. And I think the interesting thing is if you ask the majority of traders at the market, if they keep records of their sales, if they know what profits they make on each product they sell, if they are strict with accounting, the majority would say no. And I fit into that category, sadly. So I always bought jewelry. I sell antique and collectible jewelry, and I have done that for 30 years at the Rosebank Market. I was one of the original traders there in 1994 when Brad Fisher and Brent Herbert opened the Rosebank Sunday Market. And I never had an exact cost of every product. I bought at a certain price, and I sold at a certain price. And thank God that formula always worked for me and has worked for 30 years. But if you ask me what my profit margins are or how much profit I make every Sunday, I can't tell you. And I can't tell you what I've made in the past over 30 years of running this business. So my business, my accountant can tell you very accurately what we made and what our profits and losses have been. In my own personal capacity, I cannot do that.
So you've just summed up what I said in the beginning of, is it art or is it science? And it's a little bit of both. And you've got, you understand that you need to make a profit, and you've got a gut feel around that, and therefore over time you've been successful, but maybe you don't know all the little things. And I think that's a huge lesson for anybody trying to get into business, is you don't have to know everything. It's about starting. It's about getting in there, getting to the water, and then you learn to swim once you're in the water. You can't take a book on swimming and read it and then dive into the deep end. You get to do things by doing them.
Right. And I think you've got to surround yourself with the right people. So my family, my children, Brad Fisher, the previous owner of the market, have really supported me. Ortjet have always been there to give me a mentor. I've attended a lot of their lectures. I think if you surround yourself with the right people and you can get the right advice when you're in a crisis or when you really need to know how to move forward, that can pull you through your lack of knowledge and expertise.
Wow. So, I mean, the lessons are incredible. Besides everything that we've said, two extra things that I think you've added here is, if you can't do it, outsource. And the other thing is networking and people are important. And
critical.
I think
if you're critical,
and if you pick up any business books, these are kind of some of the things that they would say. So, Donna, I want to thank you very much
thank
for being
you.
Part of the show and for kind of being the first one. And hopefully we'll do another one with you in 30 years' time.
Please, God.
Please, God.
I won't be running the market.
So,
thank you.
Thank you. I'm David Zeidel. This is Donna Druin, and this has been the Ortjet Business Show.